Bristol, For the Record, a new local oral history podcast from BCFM Radio in partnership with MShed Bristol and funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund.
The Bristol Bad Film Club was set up in August 2013 after a movie night with some friends. Its founder and programmer is the one and only Ty Singh, who is also a writer and podcaster based in the city. Ty has written for film outlets such as Den of Geek, Film Stories and Cineworld. He is a regular contributor to the Cosmic Shed podcast and wrote the book Born to be Bad, talking to the greatest villains in action cinema, where he interviewed some of the most iconic actors working in the industry. Hi, Ty.
Hey, Marcus. How's it going?
Very well. Thank you so much for joining us on this local oral history podcast.
No problem. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's kick things off. Ty, why is cinema so important to you?
I guess films in general are important to me. It's something that was a constant growing up. Even though that my parents were both pharmacists, I always loved the movies, and my mum was a big movie fan. And from an early age, she was showing me and my brothers everything from Star Wars to Singing in the Rain to The Wizard of Oz to Ray Harryhausen monster films. And just up the road from my parents' business, which was a pharmacy in Cotton Hill, there was a video rental shop. So me and my brothers used to be in there a lot, just, you know, with my dad deciding what film we would rent. And as such, I've just always had an affinity for not just movies, but the entire industry around it, whether it's cinema, video rental stores, DVDs. And I'm just fascinated by how the industry is constantly changing.
Can you describe the current Bristol movie-going and cinema scene? In what health is it at the moment?
I mean, the state of cinema is something that's constantly changing, and it was changing before the pandemic. So Bristol's actually a UNESCO City of Film. It's got a very rich and vibrant film culture, and you've got film festivals ranging from Cinema Rediscovered at the Watershed to Slapstick to, you know, organizations like Southwest Silence and Film Noir UK. So it's very rich, very vibrant, and there are, you know, a host of cinemas from, you know, the Cineworld, which the chain is in a lot of financial straits at the moment, but the Showcase at Avonmead, you've got the Showcase at Cabot Circus, you've got Watershed, you've got Curzon out at Clevedon, you've got the Everyman on White Ladies Road, which I used to go to as a kid when it was ABC White Ladies, the Orpheus in Henlees, and, you know, just all these great little cinemas all over the place. But, you know, these cinemas are rapidly disappearing as a homogenization of the industry takes hold. It's a very weird situation with the news about Cineworld, because if the Cineworld in Hengrove closes, which is my local, then South Bristol, an entire half of the city, suddenly doesn't have a cinema. You have to go into, you know, Cabot Circus or Watershed to be able to watch a movie. And I think that's really saying something about the industry, which was already fighting a whole host of factors, such as the rise of streaming services before the pandemic. But, you know, COVID really gave the industry a bit of a kicking. And depending on who you talk to, they will say that, you know, cinema as a medium is dead. But I don't believe that. I think there is always the appetite for people to want to join with strangers in a dark room and share that communal experience of watching a film, whether it is, you know, a big blockbuster, a horror where everyone is sharing that same terrifying experience, or a comedy. So it's in a weird state at the moment, and it's going to be an interesting next few years.
There's been a number of neighborhood cinemas in Bristol over the decades, hasn't there? I'm just thinking now from the top of my head. I remember going to the Gaiety Cinema in Knowle. I think I saw Cool Runnings there as a child. There's also St. George's Hall in St. George, which they're trying to reopen. Am I missing anyone, any out you can think of?
I mean, I remember there was an Odeon underneath the ice rink when I was younger, the Fish Ponds, was it Fish Pond Street? So there was also the Odeon on that's still there on Union Street that I used to go to with friends after school. And then the Cube. The Cube's still there. The Cube's still going, being, you know, the unique Bristol venue that it is, the Microplex.
I remember there being a cinema in Fish Ponds at some point, which is now a pub, I think.
There are a host of them that, you know, old cinemas that is it the Redfield cinema they're trying to reopen? Yeah, it's amazing how many small community cinemas have closed and the ones that are still around. It's constantly amazing that the Orpheus in Henley's is still there to me. I used to go to that all the time as a kid. But it's great that it is still there. Yeah, Bristol truly does love its cinema, but it's the smaller, more intimate community cinemas are disappearing as the multiplexes, I was going to say, are taking over, but with Cineworld taking a hit, who knows what's going to happen.
Apparently, the Orpheus, the whole building used to be one big screen, didn't it? Now it's been divided into like two or three mini screens.
When I was a kid, it was three screens. So there was a main one and then there were two smaller ones. Back in the day, it might have been a much bigger one. The Everyman, so when it was White Ladies, it's now got four screens, and I think they recently added the fourth. But I remember the top screen, screen one, used to be massive. And now it's much smaller, but it used to be, you know, loads of tiered seating, and then there was cinemas two and three underneath. And it's great that it's now a working cinema again, but every time I go to Everyman, I'm kind of like, yeah, screen one's is fine, but I remember as a kid seeing Jurassic Park there and films like Gladiator and Armageddon and Clear and Present Danger and Bond films. I just remember how much bigger it was. So, yeah, every time I go to Everyman, I'm just kind of hit with I remember when it was bigger. But you're right, yeah, that it's all about trying to fit in more screens, which is a shame, but yeah, I get it.
So how did you get into the film industry yourself? Can you describe your journey and tell us what you've been up to and what you're up to now?
It's a really weird way that I've kind of ended up in Bristol's film community. So I studied history at university, thinking that I would, you know, leave uni and become a writer. Not necessarily writing about film, because I did write for some film outlets. But what I realized quickly was I didn't like writing about film, because whenever I was watching a film, I was like thinking about what I was going to write afterwards rather than watching the film. But I liked talking about film, and I liked introducing films to people, to friends. So I worked for a bunch of marketing agencies, and then in 2008, when the recession hit, I left my job that I'd got after university, which was at BBC Magazines. And I ended up at loads of marketing agencies where, let's just say, the work wasn't very satisfying. So I needed a more creative outlet to spend my time. And that's how the Bristol Bad Film Club came about. It was because I was so bored at work. I needed something to do in my spare time. And 9 years later, it's still going. But because the Bristol Bad Film Club became a success, I ended up working for the BFI because the Bad Film Club events always sold out. So this job came up doing marketing and communications for the BFI's Film Audience Network, and I ended up getting that. And as such, I've ended up working out of the watershed, and now I work with a bunch of organizations all over the country. And over the years, I've just set up various film enterprises. Before, you had all these organizations doing outdoor screenings on the Downs and everything. I tried to resurrect that in Bristol, and I did a season at Ashton Court, and I did like a screening of Flash Gordon up at Bristol Observatory. And it came about from doing Bad Film Club screenings in the local park where I live, and they were always a success. And I remember them being a thing when I was a kid, but at the time no one else was doing them. And as soon as it kind of took off, you had all these national outdoor cinema chains that would come to Bristol and just show The Greatest Showman or Dirty Dancing or Top Gun, you know, these real crowd pleasers. But it's, you know, they basically undercut anything I was doing. So I kind of wrapped that up. And recently me and a few other Bristol cinephiles have attempted to fill another hole in what we feel was Bristol's film ecosystem. And that was setting up a genre film festival celebrating action, sci-fi, and horror films. And that's called Forbidden Worlds Film Festival. And we kicked it off in May by taking over the former Bristol IMAX screen that's part of Bristol Aquarium. For 3 days, we showed a host of films from 1982 to celebrate 40 years of 20th Century Flicks, Bristol's last remaining video shop. And this October, we're going to be back there for a three-day horror film festival. So it's weird how my trajectory from leaving uni with a history degree has ended up me doing all these film projects because I didn't study film at uni. I just really liked film. It was just my passion outside of work. And at no point did I think it would end. I'd end up doing this.
You self-described yourself as a cinephile. Can you provide a definition of that?
I wouldn't want to define it because I'm sure everyone else can disagree. But I like to think it's someone who enjoys a wide spectrum of film. It's not just like the blockbusters. I love foreign indies. I love martial arts cinema. I love trashy sci-fi films. I'll go to Slapstick Fest and watch, you know, Laurel and Hardy and Buster Keaton. I'm not saying I love everything. I like to just think that I have a wide spectrum. And it's great to just like certain things, but I think if you want to call yourself a cinephile, you've kind of got to appreciate everything from, I don't know, Gene Kelly to Scott Adkins. So, yeah, I think it's just someone who's got an appreciation for a wide range of film. You don't have to like everything, but you can appreciate it.
A wide palette.
A wide palette, exactly.
So, the Bristol Bad Film Club.
Yeah.
I'd like the origin story.
The origin story. I mean, the origin story probably goes back to Cottam Video Rental Shop. So, you know, the great thing about video rental shops is you would walk in and literally be entranced by what was on the video cover. You would literally judge a film by its cover. And the great thing about the 80s, 90s and VHSs is there would be such a wealth of films where, you know, they would entice you with a great cover art. And my dad would often go in there and come back with like the weirdest films or films that he thought were blockbusters, and he'd come back and go, hey, my kids like Indiana Jones, and he would come back with the Canon Studios King Solomon's Mind with Richard Chamberlain. You'd be like, this is not Indiana Jones, but hey, it's fun, it's trashy. And I think watching a lot of B movies as a kid, lots of monster films, lots of weird horrors, kind of gave me an appreciation for films that are punching well above their weight. You know, arguably they're not great, but you know, they deserve an appreciation. So that's kind of what the Bristol Bad Film Club is. It's celebrating films that, you know, fundamentally are bad. On a technical level, they're very rough around the edges, but they are entertaining and they're great to watch and they're fun to watch with a crowd. And, you know, these days you'll go see a big 200 million blockbuster and walk away and not remember it a few days later. And then you'll go see a film that we show, like Miami Connection, which is about a group of Taekwondo orphans that form a rock band and sing about fighting ninjas and get caught up with drug smuggling ninjas on the streets of Orlando. And that's a film you will never forget. So, yeah, that's what the Bad Film Club's all about. It's showing some of the most unique films that have ever been made. Sure, they may be bad, but they're great.
So it started after a movie night with friends in 2013. Can you remember that first event?
Yeah, so I had a friend that actually introduced me to The Room, which is known as the Citizen Kane of bad films. Your listeners might be familiar with it. It's Tommy Wiseau's quintessential masterpiece. He is a filmmaker of mysterious origins, and he made essentially a homage to Tennessee Williams, where he wrote and directed and starred in a film where he is a spurned lover who finds out that his fiance is cheating on him with his best friend. And the acting is off the charts. It costs $7 million. There's an obscene amount of green screen in there. The dialogue is stilted. And everything about it is lightning in a bottle. You couldn't try to make a film that technically awkward. And it's such a cult has grown up around it that a few years ago, a film was even made about the making of it called The Disaster Artist, based on the book The Disaster Artist that was written by the co-star Greg Sestero, who we've actually had to Bristol many times. Same with Tommy Wiseau, actually. So it was watching that film that a friend introduced me to. We were having such a great time watching it. But I kept turning to my friend just going, how, why, what, what's going on? And I fell down the rabbit hole after watching. I was basically looking up every article I could find on it, getting every book I can find, and I became borderline obsessed. And I was like, more people need to kind of see films like this, or there needs to be screenings of films like this. And in London, you've got venues like the Prince Charles Cinema. They do repertory cinema nights all the time, but there's nowhere in Bristol that really does that. Watershed hosts Cinema Rediscovered, which will do like restored premieres of classic films, like most recently they did High Noon and Harold and Maude, but they're never going to show The Room, even though in May I did get them to show The Room. That's another story. But 9 years ago, they would never show a film like The Room, or, you know, cult action films like Samurai Cop or Miami Connection. So I was like, well, if no one else is going to do it, I'll do it. And we started off doing screenings above the Lansdowne Pub in Clifton. The first film was Plan 9 from Outer Space by renowned schlock filmmaker Ed Wood, and that sold out. All 50 tickets sold out. The next month we did Samurai Cop. All 100 tickets went out and sold out. Then Star Crash, which is an Italian rip-off of Star Wars with David Hasselhoff. That sold out, and 9 years later, we're still doing it. I've never really expanded it to, like, you know, a massive venue. We always try and keep a venue where it's like 100 to 110 seats, so we know it will sell out every month. And we give all the profits to charity. It's only £5 a ticket, so if you have a terrible time, you can't begrudge your £5 going to a local charity or a cause that needs your help. So I think that's why it's done well. And I think it's just, we're bringing these films to an audience that, in a time when almost everything is available on Netflix or Amazon Prime, you've got all these cult B films that are almost lost, like they were only released on VHS. And there are a bunch of labels that do restore them and put out awesome restorations on Blu-ray. These are never going to appear on Netflix. They're never appearing on Disney Plus. So also we're supplying, you know, unique film screenings that you can't get anywhere else. And I think that's another reason why we tend to do quite well.
Can you go over some of the other venues that you've held the event over the years?
So, I mean, we used to do outdoor screenings once a year. So in Victoria Park, we did screenings of Masters of the Universe with Dolph Lundgren as He-Man in Cutthroat Island. We've done screenings at Windmill Hill City Farm of Night of the Lepus, which is a film about giant rabbits, and Raw, which was Tippi Hedren and Melanie Griffith running away from real-life lions and tigers. Our most recent home, and we've been there for, I think, almost like the last 5-6 years, is Bristol Improv Theatre, just up behind Victoria Rooms. They've got everything we need, which is AV equipment and a bar. That's all you need. Beer and speakers and a projector, and we're away. And then every now and then, if we've got like special guests like Tommy Wiseau or Greg, we'll push for a bigger venue like Arnold Feeney or Watershed or Redgrave Theatre, and we will sell out, you know, about 310 seats. People will turn out to see The Room because it's such a communal Rocky Horror Show-esque experience. People quoting along the dialogue, throwing spoons at the screen, which is an in-joke if you've seen the film. Otherwise, it just comes across as bizarre behavior. And yeah, it's great. And it's weird that next year I'll have been doing it for 10 years, which does raise the question, what the hell am I doing? But I love it. I love the fact that it's still going. And, you know, each month we can give £200 to a charity, you know, once we've paid the venue and the license fee. And it was never going to be a money-making enterprise, but, you know, I always want to dream a little bit bigger, which I think is how Forbidden Worlds has come to pass. It's just kind of scratching that itch of, hey, I'm showing bad film clubs, but what else is Bristol missing? A horror film festival. And yeah, so that's my latest project, if you will.
You mentioned throwing spoons at the screen.
Yeah.
Over the years, have there been any other quirky or funny moments or anecdotes you can think of?
I mean, there's all sorts of weird things that during the time of running the Bad Film Club have suddenly happened. So I mentioned a film called Samurai Cop, which was made in 1989 by an Iranian film director called Amir Shavan, and he escaped the Iranian Revolution, came to America, thought, hey, what sells? Action films. And he made like a D-list version of Lethal Weapon. The lead actor was an actor named Matt Hannon, who was a bodyguard for Sylvester Stallone. had a passing resemblance to Stallone, and he had long hair in the film. And one of the great things about the film was that after they had wrapped, he cut his hair, but then they needed to go back and do reshoots. So they just got like a Cher wig. And so for big chunks of the film, the actor's just there looking like Cher. He's just got a big Cher wig on. And during one of the fight scenes, it comes off. And, you know, they just keep that shot in. It's crazy. But in 2013, I remember introducing the film. I'd done a bit of background. I was like, tragically, Matt Hannon, you know, died a few years ago, which is amazing because he's in great shape. And it's weird that he died so young. And then about 3 years later, suddenly Matt Hannon posted a video online going, there's all these rumors that I've died. I've heard that Samurai Cop's been, you know, is a new cult classic. I was never dead. I was in prison for reasons that I don't want to go into, but I'm back. I'm here. And all of a sudden, like, the B movie community is like, the Samurai Cop's alive. And before you know it, a sequel is greenlit and made. Matt Hannon's in it. Tommy Wiseau from The Room is in it. And we did, like, I think it was the UK premiere, or we did it, it's the same day as the UK premiere. It's not good, by the way. The sequel was terrible. Almost like a parody of what it should have been. It was ghastly. But it was amazing that during that entire time period of, like, discovering Samurai Cop becoming a cult classic, the lead actor seemingly coming back from the dead, and the sequel being made all within, like, 5 years, that was bizarre to watch for as an outsider and a programmer. So yeah,
that sounds like a real high. I'm wondering, could you share some more highs and then maybe some difficult moments that have been running the Bristol Bad Film Club?
I mean, getting Tommy Wiseau and Greg Sestero to Bristol was great because I never thought I'd pull it off. But, you know, getting someone like Tommy, who is a very particular individual, comes with certain challenges. So that was simultaneously a high and a low. With many of these filmmakers, they are very proud of their films. So when I reach out to them, I don't necessarily say I'm from the Bristol Bad Film Club. I'm just saying, look, I run a cult movie film club. I've got a big audience base. Love to show your film. And so there is often lots of to-ing and fro-ing with directors who might be a little bit precious about their films, and I totally get that. And in hindsight, calling it the Bristol Bad Film Club was probably a mistake, because sure, these films are bad, but I don't want people to think I'm making fun of them or their films. The reason I'm showing their films is because I genuinely find them entertaining and fascinating, and I want to share them with an audience. There might be a certain level of schadenfreude where you are deriving pleasure from another person's quote-unquote failure. But I wouldn't be showing these films if I just didn't like them. I genuinely like these films. So you're always trying to walk that line between being honest about what you're doing and at the same time respectful. And that can be tricky. And, you know, I've often had some directors push back. And it's just kind of a case of going, look, you've got to know where your film sits in terms of the cinematic pantheon, and I'm not going to lie to you, but at the same time, there is an audience here that love your work and want to see it, and I want to pay you to show your film, so let's meet halfway.
So what makes a bad film?
This is all subjective, because it all depends what you define as a bad film. The bad films that we show are films that were made very earnestly and fail on a technical level. And that could be bad direction, bad acting, lack of a budget, or, you know, a host of other factors that create a lightning in the bottle situation where a film is bad but entertaining. We don't show films that are deliberately made to be bad. So there's a host of studios like The Asylum that makes mockbusters that are, you know, bad rip-offs. So, you know, they'll make films like Transmorphers or Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus, films that you go, yeah, these are deliberately bad. You've cast Tiffany in Mega Piranha. You're winking at the audience. The films that we show failed on a fundamental level, but they weren't made to be bad. The filmmakers genuinely had a vision. They just weren't able to deliver it and have made a very unique film as a result. So, and often these films are only 90 minutes, which is even great. You don't want to show like a 2.5 hour Hollywood blockbuster that beats you over the head with constant visual effects, leaving you exhausted. The films we show are like tight 90 minutes that were released on VHS back in the late 80s. And you're like, bam, that was great. Here's an action film called Action USA made by a former stuntman. He's just blowing up cars and dangling from helicopters for 90 minutes. This is awesome. And you're watching going, I know that's a real guy because this was made in 1985 as compared to something where you're like, I'm pretty sure 80, 90% of this is CGI. So I'm not as engaged as, you know, watching Tom Cruise dangle from something, for example. So it's, those are the films that we show. And I think there are, films can be bad for a host of reasons, but I think the worst crime a film can be is forgettable. And I feel, I've seen so many films recently where it's like, yeah, that was fine. And then if you were to ask me about it 2 weeks later, I wouldn't have anything to say about it. And I kind of think that's the more unforgivable crime. I think a film can be brilliant and a film can be terrible, but you're going to remember it. If a film's just average and forgettable, I think that is a worse crime than your film being technically a car crash. Because at least you'll remember the car crash.
So you love these films, and as you said, each of your events sell out. Mm. Why do people love watching these movies? What are people getting out of it?
I think there are several things. I think maybe a Schadenfreudian element of deriving pleasure from someone else's failure. I think also I introduce all these films, and often the story of how they were made is fascinating. There's also just a sheer entertainment value because these are often B-movies, so there's lots of crazy action, overblown violence, gratuitous nudity, everything you want from a good night out. And then I think there's also just the, it's something different, you know, with kind of cinemas showing pretty much all the same films. If I'm showing a screening of Lady Terminator, an Indonesian ripoff of The Terminator, but with a bit of supernatural witchcraft thrown in for good measure, then you're like, it's £5 a ticket. There's a bar there. Absolutely. Let's go see Lady Terminator. So I think it's showing something different. The kind of guarantee of a good night out. And yeah, just seeing something odd, something different, something where the next morning you'll go, you know, while everyone's talking about whatever they watched on Netflix, you're like, yeah, but I saw Lady Terminator. And that just starts off with a woman cutting off a man's member and cursing his lineage for 2,000 years, and then just turns into the Terminator. That's incredible.
The last few years have been difficult for the film and cinema industry, and we've touched upon this a little bit as well. But with COVID and the pandemic, what impact has that had on Bristol Bad Film Club, and then more in general as well?
Well, obviously during the pandemic, we couldn't do any screenings. So we stayed in touch with our audience. We did online quizzes every now and then. We did a few watch parties where there are a few films that were available on YouTube and could set up like a live chat thing. And we did a few of those, but on the whole thing about the Bad Film Club is that communal experience of watching films together. So while I think it provided a decent filler for some people, it wasn't something that I was willing to continue with. So we only did it for a few months. Then me and a colleague, Rob Hill, who wrote the Bad Movie Bible, would host online quizzes, and that was fun for a few months. But then as soon as venues reopened, it was like, right, as soon as it's safe to do so, let's get people back together, beers in hand, watching these films as, you know, they're meant to be seen with people. And that's what we did. I think it was April. We kicked off with like Action USA. And yeah, we've basically been kind of back since. We've got Blackbird at the Bristol IMAX on the 2nd, Lady Terminator on the 22nd. And then, because I'm doing Forbidden Worlds for Halloween, I don't think we'll be doing a Bad Film Club event till Christmas, when it'll probably be Silent Night, Deadly Night, which we were meant to do last Christmas. But of course, COVID stopped that. So yeah, we'll be bringing that back.
How do you see the future of Bristol Bad Film Club, and then cinema in general as well?
I think cinema's always got to evolve. And, I mean, my day job is ensuring that cinemas show a wide range of films. Because at the moment, you can go to the cinema and there's The Minions, there'll be Bullet Train, and then there'll be a couple of other things. And it can be pretty boring. So my day job is encouraging cinemas to show more foreign films, more UK indie films, to create a wide, diverse ecosystem of films. So you're not just stuck seeing the latest Hollywood blockbuster or the latest big animated film for kids. So that there's something for everyone, a story that appeals to everyone. And I saw something on Twitter the other day where they were like listing the big box office successes of 1993. And you had everything from like your big Hollywood blockbusters like Jurassic Park to courtroom dramas to rom-coms. And I think these days, the Disney model of, you know, Star Wars, Marvel, live action remakes or whatever, you don't get like a good courtroom drama or good romantic comedies in cinemas anymore. They all go straight to streaming. And it's just like the big marquee titles that cinemas show. And that's a shame. You know, so many horror films go to streaming these days, and horror films are what you want to see with people. Same with comedies. So I would hope that the future of cinema sees a more diverse offering, but part of me is like, you know, Netflix is almost filling that void of they will pay for that 30 to 50 million film that studios aren't willing to seemingly take a risk on, which, you know, made the headlines recently when they Warner Brothers shelved that Batgirl film because they're like, it only costs 90 million, but we don't think it's cinematic enough to release in cinemas, so we'll just shelve it and do it as a tax write-off, and no one will see it. And it's like, well, that's not great. That's not a good look, especially when it was a film directed by two Middle Eastern filmmakers with a black Latina lead. And you're like, oh, but you'll release The Flash, which has Ezra Miller, who is causing all sorts of headlines for assorted reasons. So, yeah, it's weird to kind of like be defending another superhero film against another superhero film, but you know, that's the state of the industry that we're in. As for the Bad Film Club, I never wanted it to kind of grow outside its means. I've always just wanted to kind of keep it as like a nice little thing, and then every now and then we'll do a big gala screening for something. But it's not the kind of thing where you're like, yeah, 500 seat cinema, everyone's coming out to see Birdemic Shock and Terror, because, you know, innately the audience for a Bad Film Club is always going to be very niche and very core. And I think that's for 10 years I haven't tried to grow it outside its means, but I do recognize that Bristol does have an audience that loves genre film like action, sci-fi and horror. So creating forbidden worlds where we can show classic and weird horror films and, you know, martial arts movies and action films is kind of the recognition of that there is an audience there, but it can't just be weird, bad films. But I do want to do something wider that appeals to that audience that Bristol has that I don't feel anyone else is catering to.
I recently saw a film with goggles on my eyes, and a virtual reality film. Do you see this being the future of cinema to a certain extent?
I don't know. It could be. I mean, 2009, when Avatar came out, everyone was like, 3D's back, baby! And, you know, 4 years, every other film was being released in 3D, and then there was a backlash against that because films would be made 3D in post-production. It didn't necessarily look good, and it darkened the screen. So, I mean, it could be. It could be, you know, it could be like an interactive film where you, like, you choose the characters, but then that seems completely redundant if when you want a filmmaker with a vision creating a movie. I think film is always going to evolve. I would like to think that cinema will always play a part in that, but I don't know. It's a weird, ever-changing industry. I don't think cinema's ever going to die. I think ever since the 50s, every 10 years, people are like, this is the end of cinema. We now have TVs. What do we need cinema for? Here's VHS. What do we need cinema for? We have home cinema systems with DVDs and Blu-rays. What do we need cinema for? And cinema has always found a way to survive and bring back audiences. And I think that will continue to be the case. I don't know how it will evolve, but I'm looking forward to seeing how it does.
So the big question.
Yeah.
What is the absolute worst film you've ever seen?
I mean, I think it would be very easy for me just to throw some big blockbuster under the bus. But hey, those films often have loads of great talented stuntmen involved. So I will name this film that I saw. It was part of a 24-hour bad movie marathon I was doing. I think I was watching at 1 in the morning and it might have almost broke my brain. And it's a Canadian horror film called Science Crazed, which I think was just released on VHS. And it's like a group of students of like, I think they had resurrected a corpse. And then the corpse slowly lumbers around the campus. But it's just very long tracking shots of like just people's reactions, this corpse moving. And I swear the film was only 70 minutes long or something. It felt like 4 hours. And I felt like I was going out of my mind. And I think that might be the worst film I've ever seen. I could watch it back and go, actually, this is hilarious. Look how cheesy and over the top it is. But whenever I think of a film that has almost reduced me to tears, it would probably be Science Crazed.
Tai Singh from the Bristol Bad Film Club, thank you so much
for your time. Thank you, Marcus, for having me.